anybody standing to sue. I think a person can file suit if he wants to, whether anybody says he can or not, but.
The other thing was exemption from the Administrative Procedures Act.
Yeah, that was there too, but there were, oh, I know what it was. The words interested party, that was the regulations again, as opposed to what appeared here. I was so happy not to see those appear in the sponsored bill.
They were responsive to your testimony.
Absolutely.
I couldn't figure out who.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to address myself to a subject on the layoffs. We feel the law presently applies to layoffs, that under the present law, the commissioner determines the amount of work, and he has determined the amount of work as all employment in the regulations. And the only reason we put it in was to clarify the situation, because I think your president, Mr. Patton, made some remark that he felt that it didn't apply to layoffs. I'm in sympathy and recognize the difficulty of trying to make some sense out of resident hire when you're laying people off. But again, you know, there are possible abuses on the other side where, you know, just magically find that the residents aren't there at the end of the season. And again, it's a question of balance and how the, if the legislature doesn't feel it should apply to layoffs, I just feel again that there's little sense, and even it'd be so easy for an employer to circumvent the deal by hiring him initially and then laying him off and, or firing him or whatever. And
that's
another
what
continuing
Bill is pointing
debate.
Out is something that certainly should be looked at very carefully in a especially in the future. I guess that I would give the same reaction that I have to those in the EEO business who talk about us alleging that we might be able to move people from camp to camp and count them twice in EEO statistics and all that sort of thing. And my reaction is a snort, because I can't think of anything on this project having the time to give that kind of thought to that minuscule kind of crap. And so
another thing that occurs to me while we're sitting here on this business, I would hate to see the law drawn in such a way that would encourage employers to actually fire people in order, instead of laying them off. I hate to see somebody's employment record was affected. Well,
we haven't pushed that at that same point regarding, really, we haven't gotten down to the mat regarding whether hiring means
well,
layoff.
Well, you know, this would be one of the questions of qualifications. If the guy, you know, if you've hired the guy and he worked all summer, you know, what all of a sudden makes him unqualified this year? And then one of the rumors, again, that you hear is that, well, now the contractors are firing these people so that next time they can say, well, he has a poor employment record or something. And I would hate to see people get caught up in that. I'm not, again, it's just a thought off the top of my head, but
I think the likelihood of it happening, I don't mind you using the word employment instead of hire, Bill. I'm not objecting to that word. It doesn't bother me in the slightest, but I think the likelihood of the layoffs is so much less now than it was in 1974, just because of the additional experience that new people who are Alaska residents have gotten in the workforce. It's almost become a question that has solved itself, but I think the only point that was made regarding the word hire as opposed to employment in the layoff situation before was that the way it was constructed, I suppose we might have one other legal barrier to throw at you at such time as we ever found it necessary.
That's
to
my
do
idea.
It. I don't think we ever.
Sorry,
really
I brought it up.
I am too. You made me say something I didn't want to get around saying.
Mr. Chairman, there is one other matter we'd like to testify on before we close on the definition of resident, and I have Ron Lawrence of the Attorney General's office here.
Okay.
We submitted some language, which I'm not sure I've yet gotten around to reading myself.
Yeah. We got this yesterday, didn't we? Have you seen this?
I have, yes.
Ron, you might just explain to the committee what.
Sure. Just identify myself for the record. My name is Ron Lawrence, and I'm with the Attorney General's office. I have asked Bill to propose this language for the definition of resident to the committee in substitution of the present five-part definition that we have in Section 90. As a result of a number of legal arguments, issues that were raised in one suit that the state has been defending the constitutionality of local hiring, that's the Kelly versus Ketchbaugh case, which I believe has now been settled, although it's not formally on the record that it has been, the parties proposed to settle it, so that the constitutionality was never determined in that case. However, in briefing that case and the various memoranda that were filed, the parties who were attacking the local hire law did attack each and every one of the individual definitions as being violative of various constitutional provisions. I think the one to describe to you that created the most problems was if we look at your committee substitute for 591, C, which says at the bottom of page 5, has established residency for voting purposes within the state. If you go to the statute which describes what it takes to establish residency, you'll find that it can happen that a person who's lived in Anchorage all his life who moves to Fairbanks for 30 days will not have a residency in the state for the purposes of voting, even though he has a resident of the state for any other purpose, simply because of the 30-day waiting period in terms of processing. So that, again, it created I don't like to call it a cute legal argument, but that's what it came down to, upon which...
I think we fixed that yesterday with 206.
I don't know if you did or not.
I know right now, though, I find that quite surprising because a person, you know, on the election board, if you live in Anchorage and you even go to another district, you know, move within the House districts to vote, you're allowed to vote and you are a resident of the state, and they do count the governor and the national elections and this type of stuff, but they don't count the House district, so they are. So they are a resident for the purpose of voting. They have just been wiped out of their house, and they are allowed to go back to their old house district and vote.
Okay, the only thing I can tell you is that was one of the arguments that was relied upon by the defendants. I don't, the definition that I proposed here is not aimed at changing anything in the status. Mr. Lindell has indicated that he believes that this in some way will affect people who go out of the state for a period of time in order to get their education. However, I think it's clear from the definition that we've included in domicile that says there's a true and permanent person, home of a person from which he has no present intention of removing and to which he intends to return whenever he is away. So it clearly contemplates people being away. It's just that they intend to come back.
So that was the principal difference I saw. A requires that he be physically present in the state, and that's been left out of your proposal.
Right. There certainly are situations where we've run into it. College students are away. Their parents have lived here for years. They were going to high school in Anchorage. They've gone outside the state to go to college and have come back in the summertime, want a job on the pipeline. And initially, some of them were denied residency cards on that basis until we just said no.
We have a young gentleman right now that's trying to get a residency card because he went outside to take care of his father who's been doing a job for about 4 months. But I do have a question on this definition of domicile of the true and permanent home. What happens to the person who, the type of a college person who's not living with a family here in Alaska, has been here for some time, votes here, leaves the state, does not physically have a place here, might not even retain a mailing address here because they see no point in paying for, an apartment here, an apartment also in the state.
It becomes a very difficult question to resolve because we're talking about a subjective intent. And what you have to do is, show us the things that will convince, what the state has to say is, show us the things that will convince us that you, even though you've been outside the state, have always intended to come back.
I think if you leave it that open, several years ago, people checked the files, one A case on residency for a gentleman who had been out of the state for a long period of time. If I'm not mistaken, he paid taxes in another state, voted to another state, given up all his holdings here, and yet he won the case on residency because he said that he had always intended to make this his permanent home, that he went out there because of financial problems and all this stuff, and he won the case.
That really surprises me.
Yeah.
because of the fact that he's done all these other objective things.
Right, I was amazed too, but he still won the case.
I would indicate also that this definition that I've presented here is, except for the 1 year durational requirement, is almost word for word, is the definition that's presently of what constitutes a resident for purposes of Title 36 and resident hire under public contracts. That is the definition of that, that portion of the law. And just one of the other things to make those two consistent.
Testified at some length on that a couple of Januaries back. As I remember.
Glenn, did you think that gave you problems of any sort that you know of?
What, the definition?
Yeah.
No, I only mentioned that as an aside, really, to because I didn't realize the intent of Mr. Lawrence was indicating that it does take care of the traveling college students and so forth. That was more of a personal comment regarding that definition than it was really a strong position. Mr. Chairman, I had only one thing I wanted to show with reference to this qualified thing, if I may, that I wish would still appear. Now let me find it again. Yes, this has the regs in it, and I was looking, no, yes, it has both, but I'm looking at the, regulations and hearings where the phrase was left out that the, part B about the employer's responsibility to judge the qualifications and so forth. The definition of qualified being there wouldn't bother me a bit if something like that were back in there to point out that the employer really does have a responsibility.
The way we contemplated that working would be that, again, the employer would have like a strong prima facie presumption going for him when he made the decision, and it would then we visualize the complainant coming and making a some sort of a case to overcome that presumption before we would entertain any kind of. I really have to agree that the employer has to make the initial determination, but on the other hand, I don't think he should have a sole and exclusive determination, because otherwise we just have no law.
Yeah. But if language such as appeared before at least was recognized in there, I would probably feel much more comfortable with it than leaving it out. So that point would cover the qualified part of it. We do object in summary to the extreme monetary damages that are called for.
It's only up to.
Yeah. And
I think about, I don't mind the 10, but like I should say that,
And the other one is the definition of what an employee is, but those are the three main things that we really are concerned with. And you did note the three words that I wanted to insert regarding the commissioner is the final judge as to residency. I think it's left open as to what is the final judge of beyond that.
Yeah, in the Section 8, Mr. Chairman, now it appears to delete any remuneration for the individual, although it apparently shows up in Title 36. But one of our problems on enforcement is that there's no incentive except for somebody that's got an axe to grind, who usually is the least typical type of complainant.
Page 4, line 4, order the employer to pay the qualified last resident for agency loss and any damage.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, that's fine. Page 4.
Yes, it's there. Okay. That part we didn't object to. If the employee suffers, fine. I think the punitive damages the state would be calling for at the 10 times level are not only excessive, I think it's just plain not called for.
Okay. We can't take any action today. We're short a member for a quorum. Do appreciate your patience and hanging around for us.
Appreciate the opportunity to put a good point in.
We will stand adjourned until some other time. We'll be sure to advise. forum, we had testimony from Mr. Dell, and he had three problems that he presented. Two of them revolving around section 4 on page 2. He objected to the term all employment falling within the purview of this of section 50. And he has a written statement that's probably in there, but anyway, it says we object strongly to use the term all employment unless there's a specific definition of employee that would be covered by the term employment, which would define carefully the intent and meaning of that term. The thrust of his argument was it should be a narrow definition to include basically foreman and below. I don't personally share that view. I have no problem with the language all employment falling within the purview of section 50, because that's all employment is all employment, and this pertains to utilization of state leased lands, and I just soon move along, but I want to bring it to your attention. The second problem is also in that same sentence, or same paragraph. The president says the commissioner of labor whose decision is final shall determine the resident status. And he asked us to insert the words final as to residency, so there's no question about what the decision being final pertains to. And I support that. I don't see any problem with doing that. And finally, his third problem is in section 9, starting on page 3 of penalties. And it reads, upon finding that qualified last resident has been rejected for terminated term employment violation of this chapter, Department of Labor require a non-compliance payment to the state up to 10 times the number of hours required. And then, in addition, the may order the employer to pay the qualified Alaska resident the wages he lost and any damages or expenses actually incurred as a result of the wrongful action. Now, this is for non-compliance, and there's a separate penalty in B for willful non-compliance, and, which is the really severe one. I tend to agree that 10 times is pretty stiff for an inadvertent mess up, but I wouldn't mind deleting that, but make it double the wages to the qualified Alaskan resident. Do you have any comments on that, Mr. Spear?
Well, treble damages has been fairly traditional, Mr. Chairman. Maybe that would be possible. It is up to, and we would obviously exercise discretion. We tried to look at this bill not just applying to the pipeline, which has rather extraordinary circumstances attached to it, looking forward to other smaller drilling contracts and various exploratory seismic operations and various other types of employment which might take place on state leased land. And, you know, double that might not be very much.
Come on.
Do you have any problems with it being changed from going to the state as going to the person? I was thinking about treble damages and it might be split. I mean, what was the purpose of it?
Well,
the state pays the cost of taking suits sometimes, or is this sort of cover the...
Well, our original, I can't remember now what the original bill was, but our intent was to provide some incentive for an individual. And the way the law is presently, the state gets all the benefit, if any, and there's no real incentive for people to come forward who may have information.
There's no incentive. It would go.
And I think the way it was finally resolved is that we would have kind of a pre-screening hearing and then, you know, give the guy a cause of action in court. And this would amount to, I think, in theory, we don't have any objections to it. Questions. Just not sure what ramifications there would be. It apparently would not be an APA hearing at that point, as I remember the bill.
That's right.
There might be a question there as to whether you really did all the due process, but before you're taken.
We included that the imposition or withholding of any payment or penalty under the section may be appealed to Superior Court, and the Superior Court here at de novo.
So then I guess the scheme would be that we would hold the hearing and find, if we find the employer guilty, levy a fine and grant the guy half of it. And then if the employer challenged it, which he would, the guy would find himself in superior court.
That's why I read it.
So presumably, you were going to argue that you withhold payment of the penalty and you take it to court, so you could do it in court.
So it amounts to about the same thing. The only, seems to me that the only way to do what you're accomplishing, seeking to accomplish, is to have the same pre-screening deal and then, you know, have an APA type hearing after which the guy, you know, could get compensated. But I think he'd still end up in court. So it would be pretty tough to, except, you know, might have some settlement value, I don't know. But I think it would be tough to set up an administrative procedure where we would be able to get employers to pay.
Yeah, the way I would see it, you'd issue the order to pay. If the guy didn't, if the employer withheld payment, the guy would have a cause of action.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he'd be in any better shape there than he would be if he was brought. So.
Norm, did you have?
Yeah, I just had a question and another suggestion. We're going now to three times treble damages.
That's what we're discussing.
Well, I think that's certainly more acceptable. Yeah.
What's the committee's feeling on this? I think we've got two questions, whether there's a payment to the state and the worker, or just the worker, and then secondly, the amount.
I feel that maybe, you know, could go up to the treble damages, and then, you know, it could be split portion of it, say a third of it going to the state or two-thirds of it going to the worker, but the worker has to at least, if it's, you know, not, if they don't give the full three times, which they could give, you know, just a portion of it, but the worker would at least have to receive his wages. But, you know, the state's getting into this, and that would at least help cover some of the expenses of...
I think I'd be opposed to that, Ramona, because there you've got, you know, who's suing who, who's the plaintiff of whether the state carries the ball or the individual carries the ball. I think I'd just as soon have the Department of Labor be the referee in the first round and then based on that decision.
I think this would just give statutory authority to the court to issue treble damages. Because, you know, we could recommend essentially to be whatever amount that we'd recommend an amount or something depending on what the facts were. But really, this section is only kind of a pre-screening device that hopefully would call out patently absurd ones to help along other ones. I don't know, once the money is paid into the general fund, I don't know what the procedure would be for handing out part of it to some of the private party. I'm sure that all of them are going to end up in court one way or the other.
I would suggest we delete this non-compliance payment to the state and make it triple damages to the qualified Alaskan resident. Is there any objection to that?
Say that again, no.
Line two, delete the non-compliance payment to the state. But then on line five, allow up to triple damages. Line five and six.
Okay. Could we put triple damages or expenses?
I shouldn't say triple damages, triple the wages. Which,
okay, triple the wages.
Which could be for damages or expenses actually incurred. In other words, what's the term I'm looking for?
Or expenses actually.
Liquidated damages.
As a result of wrongful action, whichever is.
What are we doing, legal fees?
That's.
Is that typical? The loser pays?
That's court directed, I think.
That's why I said to add that other part, or expenses
well,
actually.
Ordinary, if you say triple damages, why that's liquidated damages. That covers the whole shmear. You don't have to prove the elements of that.
What I was thinking is there was, don't ask me how the case could arise, but if some way there was damages actually higher than the three, you know, I'll say three, I have pronunciation problems with treble. But that's why I said, or leave the verbiage in there, or expenses actually incurred.
If it's higher.
If it's higher.
Yeah,
higher.
That's okay.
Or you could put treble damages plus costs or plus expenses.
Okay, any objection to that? Everybody happy?
Yep.
I mean, I think it'd be very like new chance in a case like that coming about, but.
Non-compliance to the state. Net award of 3 times the wages. Or expenses if that's greater. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Very good. No problem with including after final in that other language.
No.
Okay, now if there was.
As residency, okay.
There was a portion that we skipped over that we had mentioned problems with.
What was that?
On page 3, section 7, subparagraph B, he had a question about this. Where a list of certified Alaskan residents that he felt that we should specify in there that the list would have to be, that their occupation would have to be classified.
Okay, here's his comment on section 7. He says, proposed change to discuss the list of certified Alaska residents was not indicating a breakdown of this in the various classification categories. It may be assumed that the employment service would have to assist the wage and hour division of the Department of Labor prepare this information, that such list would be a product of the job applicant retrieval system, JARS. Since the JARS system is totally federally financed and is an adjunct to the various JARS systems in other states, the question occurs whether the use of a federally financed system to prepare information related to resident preference and hiring may cause a problem.
And the Department of Labor assured us that JARS wasn't being used, so that wasn't a problem. But he then stated that just a list of certified Alaska residents, you know, you give that to a guy that's looking for a cat operator, and they might be all carpenters. But the list should have on it.
He doesn't have a specific
No, but this came up in the conversation before you came back.
Norm, can you speak to that problem, or?
Oh, just to ask Bill how you contemplate doing it, or do you plan to do it, because there's not some breakdown by occupation.
Well, apparently we do. I mean, we do have some occupational breakdown. I put back one step. We apparently have used the JAR system to the extent that we put an asterisk by the guy's name if he is a resident. And apparently this has raised some hackles in the federal establishment. They've been looking rather jaundiced eye at the local hire program. But this list would go, you know, not only to employers, but to unions or anyone else. In other words, it just sort of is an informational deal as opposed to the situation that we have in the law now where it kind of contemplates that we're going to decide, you know, how many CAT scanners or what percentage we need, and here's our list. It just doesn't work. And this, I think we do break down. Isn't that true, Dave? Don't we give their, take a 511 from generally, and we have pretty much what they say they are anyway. We don't do too much in the way of job development, or I mean, if he says he's a CAT scanner, that's all we know. And sometimes they are, and sometimes they aren't. So I
would it cause hardships if it was put in there right after Alaska resident, list of certified Alaska residents, if we were just to insert verbiage along the lines of broken down by occupation?
Well, it'd be kind of pretty detrimental this feature again to a lot of people would be affected. You
wouldn't
give them an opportunity to develop, and they'd be set in a certain category, and they'd be left in that category.
Yeah, but upon the same thing, if you're the businessman and you're wanting to hire Alaskan resident, and you have, it's going to
you know, hinder you if you hand a list of 200 people and you don't know what any of their occupation is. You're going to have somebody sitting there calling all these people where you could go down and say, here's the cat feeders or here's the carpenters.
I would like the unions to have that list, but I wouldn't want that.
I think maybe Jimmy's right. If you've got an alphabetical list of residents and you get people dispatched from the unions, well, that's supposed to qualify them.
Yeah.
Cross-check it with the residents.
That's what I would like to have done, let the unions dispatch them. For the unions give training jobs and there's other training jobs they can change their occupation, but if they set in one category and one occupation, they'll only be hired for that one occupation. And many in the rural areas, you know, a lot of different kind of jobs come up.
But we do have, like, some of the jobs on the North Slope and that are not union jobs.
Yeah.
Some of the on your platforms and some of this thing are not union jobs, and the guy sitting up there that wants to hire an Alaskan resident, and he could call for this list, but it isn't going to be much help to him if he gets a list of 500 names and he's looking for a specific person. And
I suspect they have a centralized personnel office of some sort where they review applications to cross-check names.
Mr. Chairman, what we're getting to here is turning the program into a so-called job development deal as opposed to just giving preference. And so far, our staff is really overloaded, just getting the cards out and trying to get the qualified people preference. Now, what would it be ideal, particularly in non-union jobs and so forth, is to be able to really spend some time with these applicants who have, you know, applied for a resident card and they indicate they have certain skill or would like to have certain skill. And we try to key them into the services that already exist in the employment service and so forth where possible. But we just haven't operated this program as a job development type deal. It's just been trying to establish the framework where a guy can get preference if he's, and then he's pretty much got to carry the hod for himself or get into another program. We don't.
Okay.
I think what we could do is, if you put that language in, we would just try to adjust our application form so it reflected more accurately what the guy's experience was, and then yeah, we could break it down into some. We could break it down. They come in kind of chronologically, and that'd be this updating problem.
Yeah, I think you get in the problem of qualified and not qualified, too. If you list a guy as a carpenter and turns out that he just wants to be a carpenter and never has been one.
Then that's begin to use this instrument. More detrimental than to.
I'm just thinking, myself as an employer, if I was really trying to comply with Alaska hire law and that type of stuff, and if I was a non-union person who usually uses the JAR system or something along that line, and I come in and said, hey, I'd like some a list of your people so that, I can call, I would get very disgusted trying to look at this list of all these names if it didn't have something beside it to indicate. And I would find it pretty useless and time-consuming and very irritating.
Well, I think it kind of discourages exactly what you're trying to achieve. You should facilitate.
I wasn't here when you put this bill out, was I?
No, we did that.
General thrust of this was,
you don't have sign.
The union said, well, gee, there aren't, any residents this or that. So at least we could, give them a list and make sure that it's out that, those people, if they're around, are willing to take advantage of the list. But the whole idea of trying to ascertain what a person can do on the basis of a mailed-in application is extremely tough.
You could even say that, that just classification, you could put after that certified Alaskan resident and say what the person says he's qualified for and let the department off the hook, because they have a lot of secretarial positions and things like this that aren't union jobs. And I'm just thinking myself as an employer, I would become very infuriated with trying to use the system while I'm is handed a list of names and not told what they can do, and I have to start calling through 500 people to find out, if they're there on that list because they say they're a cat skinner, because they say they're a secretary, or because they say they're a clerk typist, or
this isn't supposed to be an employment list. This is supposed to be a list of certified Alaska residents that you can cross check a dispatch or an application against to see if the person really is a resident.
My recollection is, don't the regulations say that if you cannot find qualified residents, you must then go to a list prepared by the lender, wouldn't that facilitate?
No, that's under the present law, which is changed by this bill, which the present law does require the commissioner to keep a list and make a determination of what percentage of work should be performed by a contractor. I think the chairman is correct here, that this is really a, I mean, we do have a pretty thorough employment service, and we have a number of other programs, ASPIS and others, which do the job development work. I would feel very bad about sending this list to an employer and saying, well, gee, look at all these residents, and you can't find somebody. That, you know, we wouldn't send it to them for that purpose, but for instance, a union could get this list, and if some guy says he's got a resident card, they lost it, you know, they could check it or things like that.
Do you want to move a specific amendment, Ramona?
Oh, Gary, wait just a second, please. I would think that it would be beneficial for the unions themselves to have the list. We have this list of residents here that for this purpose. And if you, if they're not satisfied with the unionist and they want to hire arbitrary unionist, let them go to the department, state department, and get the other list that's not non-union.
That was just my point, Jimmy. If there is a company that is non-union and wants to go get the list, and they go get the list, and it's nothing but a list of 500 names, and they're looking for secretaries, you know, it's going to be very hard for them to start over the list to call all those people.
The way that could work, that employer could go to our job service and say, look, I've got an oil and gas contractor, I need a resident CAT skinner. They would punch up on the JAR system for all the CAT skinners in the state, residents and non-residents, and there's an asterisk that we presently put in the JAR system would indicate that that guy is a resident CAT skinner, and since that's a qualification for this job, we could give that employer those names, and we would be confident that the guy does have some ability to run.
Okay, right now you say the federal government is looking with a very jaundiced eye at putting an asterisk by there.
Well,
what are the chances
sure
that asterisk stays?
They're looking for some kind of deal where we're using JARs. But the way I look at it, it's a job requirement like anything else, and it's one of the types of jobs that we, that employers put in for.
Do you have a specific recommendation on Section 7 or more?
I can't really think of any good verbiage that sounds very legal other than just saying Alaskan resident.
Shall prepare a list of certified Alaska
residents
by profession, by occupation,
by what the person claims is their occupation.
By claimed occupation.
And that lets them, you know, that because the department's saying that they're worried about, you know.
Well, let me put it this way. Is there anybody that would like me to have that included with whatever language Legislative Affairs would like to include? Yeah, Rick?
Don't we issue these cards to everybody? Residency cards?
No.
Just the residents.
I mean, if anybody wants one, if Heidi here wants one, do you give her one?
Well, if she's a resident.
If she's a resident, you give her credit?
Yeah.
Or
if she wants to work on the pipeline.
Well, then.
Even if she doesn't want to work for on a pipeline.
That's all a person has to do is show their card, then. We should encourage everybody to get the card.
I've got one, I've got one. Take
one
from the pipeline.
You're in free.
Well, I think the problem is, you know, where somebody is saying, well, gee, there aren't any qualified
I couldn't get to the office. And I lost my cards and that sort of thing, too.
Well, you got to put a little bit of monkey on the back of a person applying for the job.
What I'm saying is, what if some guy's looking for Alaskan residents? It's a non-union job. He knows his secretary is going to be vacant in a month, and he hasn't really put out an ad yet, and he just wants a list to start calling people in to interview.
He goes to the state employment service or a private employment service and gets the secretaries. He looks on the list if they're.
Well, then why are we bothering the list for at all?
He looks on the list if they come from the private employment service to see if those names are residents or not.
Then why are we bothering the department putting out a list at all?
Beats me, because they want to, I guess.
So let's scratch the whole section.
Is that a motion?
No.
No.
Okay.
Nobody can find
a
need
objection
for it.
Well,
yes.
The problem would be then whether the list would be available anyway, I guess, under the public disclosure.
So Those in favor of deleting section 7?
Aye.
Opposed? Section 7 stays in. Is there any?
I mean, they can get a list by request, but you really don't have to put it in the statute, it's there.
Those in favor of amending section 7 to make it read a list by occupations?
Aye, I'll put that in.
Motion fails. In case we had one. Okay, anybody, yeah, Ron?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I had one suggested amendment to make after the meeting the other day. Glenn and I chatted, and I would propose reinserting in section 8 the language in the first sentence of the existing section 16, which reiterates the employer's responsibility to determine and judge the work qualifications of the prospective or existing employee. And I don't, in other words, it's putting the initial determination on the employer. It still allows the objective standard that the department needs whenever they're adjudicating it, namely the definition of qualified in the back. And it avoids any kind of implication that anyone but the employer is the initial judge of qualifications.
The sentence that reads it as the employer's responsibility to determine and judge the work qualifications of the prospective employee.
That's right.
And you'd recommend that?
Just at the insertion on line 8, then continue with the balance of that section.
Can you read that again?
Is the employer's responsibility to determine and adjudge the work qualifications of the prospective employee.
So moved.
Objection? Bill?
If you could insert initial before responsibility of that.
Determine and judge
the initial qualification.
Employer's initial responsibility?
In other words, I wish the language that you have there, it seems to me, you have to imply that the department has a second bite at the apple, so to speak. In other words, it says the employer has a responsibility, whatever
that's
that
the initial responsibility?
Yeah, if it were, or the responsibility in the first instance. In other words, presenting kind of a prima facie.
It is the employer's responsibility initially to determine and to judge the work qualification.
Right.
Does that bother you, Norm?
Well, I don't really see where it's necessary, because it seems implied in the balance of the hearings and investigations section and with the objective standard in the back that you can have a second bite anyway.
Well, if it's implied, then it shouldn't. Because I'm sure you'll raise the argument that's lost.
What's that language, Mr. Chairman? What would you suggest?
Is employer's responsibility to initially to determine and judge the work qualifications of prospective employee.
That's all right.
Any objections from the committee for the, on adoption of that? As an addition on line 8, page 3. Then. Okay, we got three amendments then. With that, shall we send her out?
So moved.
Objections? Do pass?
So moved.
If they gave you ripping on the floor, I don't know what the hell was happening about here for.
better than crying, Jenny.
Still not coming
in yet, Jeff? Yeah, got 10 minutes. Well, this is it for the session as far as I'm concerned, unless we get something I'm not looking for from the Senate. I don't have anything more to move. Any of you have anything you'd like us to look up at this point, or at any other point? We will stand adjourned, subject to call. Then.